Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Jules Gill, Mortal Kombat is pretty good.
Yeah, get over here into my heart, more like. The thing is that, like, we're just going to launch right into this, and we're going to do the classic thing that we do on every single UBP, which is not answer the questions provided to us by the lovely audience, but instead give, basically, I've noticed we've been doing this a lot, video game reviews in short form content right here. We give free reviews on the UBP for the brand new games that come out. So let's do it for Mortal Kombat 1.
Yeah.
Free reviews.
Well, I want to mention, I did get a question, because I interviewed lovely Ed Boon this week. I don't want to plug it that much.
I saw you, cheeky man.
Yeah, I know. Well, the thing is, when it came together, they reached out and they were just like, oh, we've got Ed Boon, you can have 10 minutes with him. And I was like, I'll take that. I absolutely love Ed Boon. I love Mortal Kombat.
Yeah. You're like walking up to him with the rose in hand, like, hello, Ed.
Please, sir. Yeah. And so they were like, you can have 10 minutes with him and we'll set it up and everything, and we'll give you the video afterwards and you can make videos out of it and everything. I was like, awesome. I really, really love that.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I didn't tell anyone because I'm always of the mind that I'll believe it when I see it. And what things fair. Fall apart. Yeah, even when I'm going on holiday, I won't believe I'm there till I step off the plane and I'm like, okay, that's Japan, right? It's right there.
I'd start believing it when I'm in the plane, you know, yeah. Or like, you know, like I maybe believe it a few hours before that.
I've seen Lost, things can go sideways. So I'm always just like, I'm very much believe it when I see it kind of person. So when Ed Boon was literally on the call with me, I was like, right, I'm definitely seeing him. It's definitely recording it. Cool. And even then, I didn't tell people, I waited. And then it was like 3 hours later, they hadn't sent the video through. And bless Cameo PR, man. Cameo Pro, they're called. Really awesome team. Like really, really lovely. And it was a genuine mistake. And that's completely fine. Like it genuinely is. It happens all the time.
Right.
But they rang and just said, we're really, really sorry. But the video side of things when you were recording just didn't come through on our end. So we actually don't have the video.
Oh, no.
So, and I thought that everything was lost. I was like, oh my God, only I know that I talked to Ed Boon.
Yeah. But, and obviously we wouldn't have believed you. We'd be like, oh, Scott was talking to Ed Boon again.
Talking to Kojima, were you? Yeah, whatever. And so it's one of those things. And then they messaged and they were like, oh, we've got the audio. We salvaged the audio so you can have the audio. And I was like, okay, there's proof that it happened. So then it was like, okay, let's make some animations. Let's like, and then Dan Durkin, our phenomenal editor, made a really cool little animation of me as Scorpion. It's Scorpion with my head, and then Sub-Zero and Ed Boon's head.
So cool.
And it's just us like standing on the screen fighting, waiting to fight each other. And it's just all the audio.
How was it speaking to him?
Like, he's lovely.
He's like one of your childhood icons.
Though. Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
Like, he's like, were you nervous?
I'm all right once I get going with interviews. Like, I've done enough of them at this point. And like, it's one of those things where like, it's always the bit just before you connect where I'm the most like, oh my God, I'm just, you're kind of anxious. You're just waiting to get stuck into it.
Yeah.
It's that little bit. It's that little sort of 5-10 minute window where you're just waiting to connect and you know, you're just counting down the minutes and you can't start anything else or do anything else.
That's the moment it becomes real for you. That's kind of just talking about. That is the reality.
Yeah, but I want to super quickly just plug that interview because I was like, I get 10 minutes with him. It's Ed Boon. I'm going to ask him all the stuff that I want to know about.
Yeah.
So I asked him about the cancelled Mortal Kombat reboot that was talked about in the late 2000s when he wanted to make it way more realistic, and then it didn't happen because the company went under and they did the reboot in 2011 instead. So I asked him about that. I asked him about Shaolin Monks being remade or a sequel to it. I asked him about Injustice 3, what's happening with that.
Yeah.
And then I knew that obviously it's a promotional interview in the guts guts of it, like the whole reason that it exists is to promote a new one. So I was like, I'm going to ask about his new favorite fatality in MK1, which I did want to know about, and stuff like what's your favorite change and things like that for the new timeline. So it's a really fun interview. It's only like 10 minutes, but it's very packed. It's very much in chunks because I literally opened the interview by praising the hell out of him and then saying, before you barely had a chance to say anything, I was like, I'm going to go as fast as I can because I've got all these things to talk about. And he was just kind of smiling and laughing and stuff. He was really lovely.
Oh, bless him.
So it was very nice. It's very, very surreal to talk to one of your childhood heroes.
Yeah, congratulations, man. That's a big tick off the bucket list there.
It is. It definitely is. Next stop, Kojima. I'm coming for
him. Yeah, I was about to say, you try to pin that man down. What's the point of even bringing questions to an interview like that with him? He'd probably just be like sitting there, sipping wine out of a hat.
Like an upside down skull.
Yeah, exactly. And he'd be like, what's going on? He's like, that's exactly what I want you to feel.
Yeah, what's going on is whatever you feel right now. But yeah, massive thank you to everybody for sending in their various questions, talking points, etc. I had a few people asking about the Ed Boon interview. But yeah, genuinely awesome. It was incredible. A spin-off from that was Willie Arreaz saying, do either of us have a bucket list of people that we would love to interview? And is Kojima my holy grail? Yeah, I guess it probably is. Who would you have? Who's your gaming holy grail?
That's a tough one. I tell you what, who I would like to, because I feel like it's been a culmination of a grudge match nemesis thing. I'd like to sit down and chat to Peter Molyneux, but I wouldn't like there to be, I wouldn't want there to be cameras. I wouldn't want there to be recording devices. I just want to sit down there, talk to him, mano a mano, and just be like, what are you on about? listen, geese, like, what are you on about?
You could do a whole series of what's blah on about?
I honestly think that if you get him behind closed doors, that he would just it would be like his shoulders would relax. He'd finally just be like,
oh. The version of him that his family sees at Christmas.
And he'd stop pretending and he'd be like, listen, I don't know what I'm even saying. I get up there and I just get drunk on the lights, mate. I don't know what's going on. I just say stuff and I look over to people and they nod or they shake their head and I just do the opposite of that. And it's just...
You could do such a great skit with him just being off his face where he's like, you all convinced there was a kid leaving the Kinect. Remember when you were going to talk to the Kinect?
Because this is the thing, you never ever want to, for libel or anything like that, say that X is a liar or something like that. But there are certain fibs that were all truth-stretching moments that have been populated his career more than anyone else.
Yes.
And the thing is that the man is... He is a genius. There is amazing concepts there. And he's just always ahead of the curve before technology is able to do that. If he brought Milo back today, it's doable. We have AI voices generation. Yeah. We have webcams and stuff. You could literally do all of that now anyway.
True.
His ideas are fundamentally brilliant. That whole thing of I'm going to simplify combat by putting it all onto one button. It sounds insane, but if you do it right, it would have been amazing.
In Fable too.
But that's the thing. He's got great ideas. It's just, unfortunately, it's the No Man's Sky thing of the PR gets away from him. The beast is uncaged. He just says slightly the wrong thing. And unfortunately, he doesn't know when to capture it back and redial it in because he doesn't want to be the guy who says no. He just wants to be yes, yes, yes.
He's very addicted to the hype cycle and that portion of game development where anything's possible. I think that's the bit that he thrives on, where it's like, we're going to do this and this and this. And oh my God, can you believe it? And then it needs to come together at some point.
Hands down, I genuinely think that having a pint with him would be so enthralling because imagine the idea that he couldn't get to the table. if these are the mad things that he managed to get off the ground, what was the stuff he was thinking about that he couldn't do?
Well, I love the fact, it's a fact with him, that he just bantered his way into the industry. He was called by accident. Someone wanted a PC repair or something. And he just pretended he could do that and then went to the office and then got into game development by just pretending he could. It was someone rang the wrong person and he ended up going for this fake interview thing. And he just said, oh yeah, I can do that. I can make that. He's like Hitman. He's like Agent 47. I can do all that.
Straight in.
Yeah, just blend right. He just walks right through the game studio and makes it out with a whole career somehow. But
you know what the worst thing about it is that out of all of his games that shouldn't have been cancelled, that I actually even got to play and thought was good, was that Fable Legends game. Mm-hmm. That asymmetrical thing was still just taking off at that point because Evolve was around the corner around the same time as it. Mm. And they shuttered production on what would have actually been a Fable game that would have got into the hands of millions potentially and actually saved the entire franchise as a result. And it's the one thing that I'm like, you actually had a good idea and you executed it well here. But now we can't play it. Oh.
Well, it's like they had so many opportunities. That was the whole beginning of the Xbox One generation.
It was, at the minute.
I don't know if you are you keeping up with all the Xbox leaks stuff?
Yeah.
Because it's everything from that. And like the amount of like emails from Phil Spencer, like acknowledging internally that like they've all of last year they had nothing, and like how empty their slate is, and they need to do better, they need to regroup. And he's messaging the different like heads of the various sections, just saying, don't give me windows of release, give me specific stuff. We can't just keep talking about vagaries anymore. And just how like kind of ridiculous that whole era has been. But it kind of, it does all come full circle, because if they launched with, let's say, Scalebound and Fable, I know those games like apparently weren't finished, and we don't know what reality they were in. But there is an alternate reality where they launched the Xbox One with Fable Legends, with Scalebound, and then they had Sunset Overdrive, and then they had Halo 5, and it's like they had like momentum that they just don't have right now.
But here's my counterpoint to that. We would have been having a very different discussion if Halo Infinite was better received, because they had just one exclusive and then would point everything back towards that, they'd be like, look, listen, we don't have as many like exclusives as Sony or Nintendo. That's true. But we have the best one. Like, you know, that's how they'd market it. But because it didn't, they were just like, oh no, the bridge has collapsed and we haven't built anything to get around. It's so ridiculous.
Nuts as well, because I love Starfield. I think that's not my game of the year, but it's way up there. Like, I love my time with that thing, and I've put like 80 hours into it, but it's not Baldur's Gate 3, and it's not as impressive as Baldur's Gate 3, and it's not even as like give it to anyone and they'll get it as Baldur's Gate 3. Like, you know, you give someone Starfield and they'll just stumble around for a few hours because it doesn't really kick in for about 5 hours, and it is awkward, and it is an old school Bethesda RPG. That's the beauty of it, but it's one of those things where it doesn't feel as immediate or as you know, like instant or whatever as like a lot of these other top tier exclusives.
That's why I liked the Outer Worlds, you know, when Obsidian did their sci-fi thing, because even though that game definitely had its shortcomings, like with small maps and like limited scope of what you could do in the grander scheme of things, the way that it started was amazing, because it just goes, here's a character, drop you in, cool, action, go, ship, done, and now you're free. And it's like, cool, you've onboarded players really, really well and quickly, and given them a choice to either go to the starting town and go through a lot of like basic quests to understand how this game works, or fly off in your ship and go somewhere completely different.
And I was like, the cool. First like big moral thing they drop you into is a really good like dispute over like workers' rights and allocation of resources, whether to side with the business and everything else. Like, it's immediately the DNA of what you want from that kind of game, and Starfield is full of that, but you've kind of got to go searching for it a bit. But yeah, it's a weird thing. Just, I mean, we've got questions about Xbox stuff, but it just like in general.
Come from Mortal Kombat, where we're going to provide a review, then to where Boone interview, then says, classic, by the way. By the way, I'm Jules. This is Scott. This
I didn't
is
even say our names. Like, yeah, Jules Gill, I'm Scott Taylor. The Mortal Kombat, it's worth saying, is brilliant. I mean, I, at the minute, I've been completely sideswiped by Baldur's Gate. I've just played like 20 hours of that in like 3 days.
It is brilliant, but there is the Jules big caveat, asterisk marks on it. The combat is great. It flows really well. I'm really enjoying the cameos. I think that's a fantastic addition. Obviously, there's a lot of people that are like, yes.
Okay.
So I have blitzed through the story on this one there, and I think that it is the most fan servicey, crazy, over-the-top thing that they could have possibly done. It is what Marvel films have been trying to do for so long, and with their interconnected stories, is all I'll say. And I do think that it, for the most part, hits all the right notes, even if some characters make some incredibly dumb decisions that don't make any sense.
Right, towards the end, it starts to be a bit shaky.
But at the same time, it's fun, and I never wanted anything less than fun from that. So great. Great story, great graphics, great gameplay. But the one thing that's really sort of like hampering my experience with it, and I know it's such a nitpick sort of thing, is, you know, those clashes at the very beginning when the level...
I was going to say, we talked about this last week.
And you go shoulder to shoulder. I just think it's so boring. It is so boring, those things there, where I'm just like, I don't feel engaged at all. So that when the battle actually kicks off, I don't feel like I'm actually spiting my opponent by defeating them. I just feel like, oh, we're having a bit of a Barney.
It's like, more like, because they're not in the invasions. Invasions, I'm still kind of meh on. It's kind of like some of the modifiers where it's, oh, now you're in darkness. Or now there's acid pools on the floor.
It feels like it's gimmicky for the sake of being gimmicky. But I feel like what we're actually seeing is that Mortal Kombat is becoming the story man's fighting game. Like, it is a story with fighting elements. And that is completely fine, because if they keep expanding this out and turn it effectively into an RPG with fighting things, that's what the Sub-Zero spin-off and Shaolin Monks was trying to do. You know what I mean? They're going back to that idea, and they're basically doing it right. So thumbs up. I give it an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, my thing is, I effing loved my time with it. I was giddy for most of the story. The very, very, very end, I thought, was way too cut short, and it feels like something was deleted. I actually asked Ed Boon about that as well, which is another thing. There was a specific character and a specific thing they were building to that they pulled right back from at the very end. He says they didn't, in terms of that wasn't the plan, and I was like, maybe that's just me, and I'm reading into it. I guess it's a spoiler to mention them, but to me, they're seeded throughout the whole story.
It is funny, isn't it, when you've got moments like that where, like, plot holes or unexplored plot threads threads. When it's a video game, you think it's cut content. Like, of course, the developer thought about that. But we have to accept this sometimes. But sometimes they're just stories just aren't written well. Sometimes they don't have like the connected tissue there because somebody just didn't think of it.
Like, well, the thing is, like, there's a lot of like the Switch version is like ridiculous at the minute.
Bad.
That thing
it's
is bad. Yeah, the faces look terrible. It's not worth the full
they
price.
They shouldn't have released it. I genuinely think that there are some games that you should just be like, look, let's cut our losses. We're not going to do it. Like,
sometimes
it's worse
them.
For us. It's worse for Mortal Kombat as a whole to have this amount of negative press than actually releasing a substandard game.
Definitely. And it's like you're Mortal Kombat, you're Warner Brothers. You could have easily just staggered this thing, have it on main consoles first and Switch for Christmas or something.
Or in the Switch 2, which apparently is right around the corner. Yeah.
That would definitely would have freed a lot of stuff up. But it's weird with the development of MK1 that it kind of overlapped with Injustice 3. There's another thing that I asked him about, and he was like, I can't talk about it. But in terms of some of that stuff. But like, according to Jeff Grubb, in 2021, they were making Injustice 3, and then they pivoted back to Mortal Kombat because of all the weird acquisitional stuff that was happening with Warner Brothers and AT&T and everything. And so I think that's kind of why parts of MK1 are a little bit patchy. Like, the very end of the story feels like it cuts to the final scene rather than having it finish.
Yeah.
And it's like things like some of the subtitles are missing in some of the characters, and like the intro dialogue that you mentioned, the clashes, like things that would be extra, maybe polished, but also
polished.
Like,
yeah,
things polished. That you could cut out if you were trying to, you know, hit a deadline. Because it's like, even the victories when you win a match, they're all from the same camera angle. Like, whereas in MK11, they would shoot characters differently and have things like that. So once you start, I mean, it's applying that lens, but once you start looking through that lens, it does not look rushed, but you can see the corners that were cut, if you want to say they were corners cut, to get it over the finish line. For me, I'm still loving playing it, and I've loved my time with it. It's just the invasion mode is the supplementary single player thing.
Yeah.
I'm not really liking it. I just think you walk so slowly between stuff. Yeah. If you lose on the tower, you go back to the start, and you could be 10 floors up.
That's a good one, isn't it? Like you say, it's just a little lack of polish and that respect for the player's time.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of fighting games, Richard says, are we an analog stick or D-pad kind of player when it comes to fighting games?
Oh, D-pad.
D-pad all the way.
I find it so bizarre when I see people using analog stick stuff. Like, but weirdly, I understand arcade sticks because they make more sense because of just the height of the stick itself means that you can get a better grip on it. Mm-hmm. But when I see analog stick people doing, I'm like, I don't have the range of precise motion to make sure that my down isn't counted as a backwards down, if you know what I mean.
Yes, exactly.
Like, I'm always worried that I'm just going to go, oh, now I'm crouching instead of actually like doing this.
That's always my thing with analog sticks is that where's the overlap in, like, when does down become one of the diagonals? And plus, like, most of the move lists on screen are made for D-pad directions anyway.
It's true. Yeah.
But I don't know if it's just because of how we came up. Like, we came up on, we predate analog sticks, like, in terms of how long we've been doing this. So it's like, I'd be D-pad for fighting stuff. John Stamblick says, question for the UBP, Digimon or Pokemon? Obviously, Digimon's are far superior as they have better character development, hence why it's the better choice, apparently.
That is this a troll question? Digimon has the better character development. I mean,
as far as character development goes, apparently.
So character development is one thing, but name me a person who doesn't love Ash Ketchum. I'd say that, like, it doesn't need to have significant character arcs. And
I would say Pikachu's got like a character as well. He's a sassy little boy.
Yeah, exactly. Plus, actually, I'm just thinking about Ash's journey. Like, he stumbled forwards throughout most of his career and then eventually wins anyway. So at the end of the day, he does have a character arc that is actually pretty satisfying.
That's true.
It's like the One Piece of Pokemon. Like, it's just keep going.
True. Can you name any Digimon? I actually don't know any of them right now. I tried watching Digimon, but I was too heavy into Pokemon. It didn't stick.
Do you know what? I didn't get on board with Digimon because I always thought that while the animation for the kids' TV show was cool, the actual like video games and all of the like cards and stuff like that would be around it, or like the little like toys, they all just look so gangly and weird. It looked like your 13-year-old brother had designed half of them because they were just so full of like edgelord, like, oh, I'm gonna put chains on this person for no reason. Oh, I'm gonna have like he's got like a high collar that hides his dark face.
This is so
it's
funny.
Like, it's like you've literally just I think it was Angelmon. It's like a little puffball,
right?
And it turns into like a like a giant angel as like its final form, and I'm like, that's not how we've what.
My thing is, as you were describing that, I was trying to remember. There's a thing, I don't know what you call the main orange dinosaur Pokemon. Like, there was like a
gnome Chomsky. Let's just call it that.
Yeah. Chompmon.
And yeah, Chompmon.
When he goes, because they can, I know this is annoying the Digimon fans, but when this like goes in a certain, when he goes in a certain direction, he becomes like a real, like a bone chain demon.
Yeah, Bonasaur. I remember
Bonemon. Yeah. And I loved that design as a kid. Like, you're talking about like the 13-year-old edgelord. That's me.
But it's taking a classic staple. It's a T-Rex with a skull hat on.
Yeah.
It's just Marowak on steroids. Like, I understand that that's cool, but there are other ones. ones where it's just like they're mutating into some sort of like absolutely freakish thing that you're just like, that is not cute. I don't like this. Put it away.
I tell you what, I always have a rule with Pokemon. Humanoid Pokemon, Pokemon that can walk on two legs. Get them the hell away from me. I don't want a Pokemon walking up next to me that doesn't talk and just looks at me and sort of just says its name at me.
It's freakish, man, because you just, they're like, okay, so if you are evolving in this form into like a humanoid creature and we're accepting this is, it's like, shouldn't we be giving you rights? Because obviously, like, you know what I mean? Like at one point...
You can walk to work, you can have rights.
If the distinction between like animal and human is getting so like paper thin, maybe we should be having a discussion about Pokemon rights. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they can have a comment. You can listen. You can talk to them and they understand you and they just can't commune back or whatever. But some of them could probably write you a note.
It reminds me of like the Dragon's Dogma thing, because obviously Dragon's Dogma 2 just got like announcement. The Capcom thing, the pawns are back again. Now the pawns are those little like they are described in the game as humanoid in appearance but have absolutely zero brain and will do whatever you tell them to do, right? That is so creepy and weird that I feel very uncomfortable. It is the one thing about Dragon's Dogma that makes me feel, it gives me the ick, to use the common expression, because it's like, this is one step away from abject human suffering. Yes. I don't like the fact that you can just tell this person to do whatever and they have to do it.
It's like an AI
also,
person.
You sit them down in a chair and tell them to shut up and they will speak less. None of this seems okay. This is like, this is not cool.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
No, they're pretty much the ick, the feeling that I get from the humanoid Pokemon. There's one of the new ones that's like a big red, looks like a person in a onesie. Like, it's just sort of like, looks like a person coming at you. But yeah, the pawns are weird, because I'm like, what do you guys think or feel or do?
They're not allowed to. That's so odd. I don't like this. I don't like it. So
there's so many of them just coming at you. Question from It's Me, Poolsy Hay, who says, do you guys believe you can play a game too much? For example, I have 700 hours in Fallout 4 and I'll probably end up doing 700 more. Is there a game that you've put too much time into?
Yeah, there is actually, like, sometimes I feel like I play a game and I'll get to like the 100-hour mark and a little switch will flick in my brain and it will immediately see the gameplay loop, as in it will go, oh, I'm doing this to fight a boss, to get better stuff, to fight bigger bosses, to get better stuff, to do that. And as soon as I become aware of that, my enjoyment goes downhill.
Massively.
Because it's usually just like, when I know I'm the rat on the wheel or going through the maze, it's not fun anymore.
No.
But when you are just questing for cheese, as it were, Gromit, it's fine. That's absolutely fine. Because yes. You're not aware of it.
I remember reading about, and I'm going to forget his first name, but the surname is Shabilsky. There was a, I read all about, it was like this dude did a whole thing about gameplay loops. And obviously we talk about them all the time now. It's way more of a common parlance thing. But I'm going back about 10, 12, 15 years. And obviously they would have existed before then as well. But in terms of a conversation on them, an academic sort of investigation into them, realizing that obviously like where enjoyment comes from for video games and how you can have multiple loops at the same time and then sometimes when they converge that can be the best part of the game and things. But like you said, so many games now only front load those loops and make it they showcase you like, oh, here's the loot you're gonna get, look how shiny it is, go do these five missions, you've done 3 out of 5, whatever, and they showcase the loop thing. And some games have become really popular for doing that, but some of the best games have that in the background where you don't realize which wheels you're on until you know that you arc around that loop and it comes back together again. Yeah. And it's like, I guess I like a mix of the two, but I would prefer not knowing which loop I'm on. But like you said, sometimes you just realize like, oh, this is the game. Like I always find that when I'm playing something, I'm almost ostensibly looking for the loops, or I end up realizing them. And then once you've realized it, either a story will propel me through, or it's easier to put something down, or it's easier to move on because I've quote unquote seen all it's going to give me.
I tell you the game that I realized very hard that it was just like, oh, I've sunk a load of hours in and I'm never going to 100% it. So I feel like I'm at a lost cause, like sunk cost fallacy, when it was Gears of War 2, when they brought out the Seriously 2.0 achievement was obviously bundled with the game.
Oh, God,
I wasn't looking at the achievements for absolutely ages. I just played through the storyline, had a great time, did it co-op, had like parties over. We played lots of online games and stuff. Had a brilliant time. And then I was like, oh, well, I've actually progressed a few of my skills up to like Onyx level or whatever it was back in the day. And I was like, oh, I'll go and have a look and see where I am on this. And I was like, oh, I'm so far away from ever achieving this Seriously 2.0 achievement that I've already sunk like 80 hours into this playing it online.
It's and like the bottom falls out because it's like, well, I'm never going to get there.
And I was like, I'm here. I'm like, I'm 15% of the way towards it. I'm going to need to spend another like so much time. I was like, oh, now it's not fun. It's not fun anymore.
I remember having my realization with that. It was with collectibles and it was GTA 4. It was it was the pigeons because I was just like, I'm never going to do this. I'm never just going to comb the environment and find them. And I let go of a part of myself then because it was like I was trying to 100% everything. I was trying to see everything. And with GTA 4, it was like, I'm just never going to do this. And I remember that with Assassin's Creed 1 as well with the flags, where I did all of the flags in the first area. And then it was like, right, now go do them again. There's 50 more.
Like, no,
and I was just like, nah, I'm just not going to do it. And I just let go of that. And so it's like there has to be like a propulsive element to it to keep you going. For me, I've realized it's story. Like unless the mechanics are flawless. Story.
It is freeing actually once you realize that you don't have to do all the collectible style stuff. Like I know that there's people probably out there with like their OCD mentality of like, oh, I want to go to do all this to have like a clean map.
It can definitely be satisfying.
And I understand that, don't get me wrong, but it's like even with a game like Bomb Rush Cyberpunk, like I've really enjoyed that game and I've gone through a few areas and found all of the graffiti tags in there, but there's a few of them like, nah, I didn't actually enjoy that level that much, so I'm not going to bother going around and wasting all my time just doing that. So it's like, I've seen and gotten everything I want to out of this game. Anything more feels like it's just like overindulgence, and I will walk away with less of an impressive experience. Because tidying up and doing all the busy work after a main story finishes, it can be the best if it's like optional super bosses and all the crazy stuff like that, but it can be so boring when it goes, hey, look, we're going to let you back into the world now you've completed the main game, and look, just go pick up all the stuff.
It actually almost is like tidying up. And I love if you get like the end game of like a Metroidvania, especially Metroid Dread, you've got all your powers. Like some games do that. God of War's phenomenal at the end of Ragnarok, then the 2018 one as well. But yeah, in terms of like, can you play a game too much? Not if you're enjoying it. I think if you're still loving it, no, play as much as you want. It depends if you're, it's one of those things where if you get in that mindset where, like you said, Jules, like you're aware of like the gameplay loop, I'm just doing this for the sake of it. Is my soul satisfied? Probably no. Maybe go find something else at that point.
It's a case of like, because I played Halo 2 to death when it came out because it was like the first game that I had Xbox Live for. And me and my mate Liam, we played it religiously, like every single chance that we could. And I would argue that we played like so much of that game that it would be to many people like too much. But if you were to tell me right here, right now, hey, look, we can go get that set up again and play it, of course I'm going to jump back in. So I think, as Scott said, if you're enjoying it and always having a good time, fantastic. But even though I was doing the same thing over and over again.
My thing is, I realized this, because I played so much Final Fantasy in a row that I just cannot get enough of good stories and good turn-based combat. I realized that's my perfect mesh, which is what Sea of Stars doesn't have, because that game's story is nothing.
And are you excited for Like a Dragon then? Because obviously that the new expansions.
I don't know, is that one turn-based? I don't know if the new one is.
It's not technically, is it? Well, is it turn-based? Because they made a big gameplay feature. They released a storyline one and a gameplay one.
I'm
now
so
like... You can move your character around before they enact their actions, right. Which apparently was a big complaint you had of the previous game.
Yeah, my thing was like... Animation. And my thing in Yakuza 7, Yakuza Like a Dragon, when they brought in Ichiban Kazuga, was like, you could pick a move, but then one of the NPCs, because you're just fighting in the street, would just walk in front of you, and it would just cancel it out, and you would hit against them, and I would be like, well, this is terrible. I want to commit to the move.
Apparently now that is fixed.
Right, okay, that's cool. Because Yakuza is one of my favorite, and also Like a Dragon, one of my favorite franchises. But at the minute, I've not finished Like a Dragon Ishin from earlier this year.
Got you.
So I'm 80 hours behind, and the next one's about to come out as well. So I'm like, oh, God, or whatever. But yeah, if you're enjoying yourself, you keep going. A question from Jean Malave, who says, why do the collector's editions of games like Spider-Man 2 for the PS5 or God of War Ragnarok come discless with only a display case? Shouldn't we be getting all if it's included in the collector's edition?
Yes.
If it is indeed the collector's edition.
It's a very good good shout, because I'm always perplexed as to why it's like, you've bought a game that doesn't have a game, but you've got a digital copy of the game. Like, you are surely proving to the publisher beyond all shadow of a doubt that you are the biggest fan, that you are pre-ordering something that is so monumental in price, size, scope, whatever, that you should be by... like gratis given the actual game on a disc. It seems so bizarre.
I don't know if it's like I don't know if it's because are they working on it up until day one, and then when the statues get made, the collectibles get made, that's so far in advance because of manufacturing cycles, like your physical product being turned around, versus the reality of game dev where they want to work up until the day before to put a day one patch out, and they just need to stagger it. They can't give you the crap version essentially that's still being worked on.
It's very likely that they are doing that, but it's just such a bizarre thing because they also ship like full retail copies of the game anyway. So what it would actually be is just a case of, even if they just said, like, look, you order the collector's edition, you get the digital code early, but when this thing is shipped, you'll receive it slightly later, and it will have the physical release in, because then we're just picking up a disc off of the final gold printed run to put in.
Like, that's
a fairly decent compromise, I guess.
Yeah, plus you could do like a two-step launch thing. Like, you have your launch day collector's edition that comes with a digital code, and then they literally say up front, like, hey, we're going to do these gold minted fancy discs, whatever fancy disc version that you get, and they just give you that separately. It's a separate deliverable date, like a month later or something, but at least you're playing the game at launch.
Yes, so strange. Such a weird move, isn't it? For
it is a big gap. Mouse Hans says, they hope Josh is doing well. Same. I'm sure he's doing pretty well. He should be back soon enough. In a recent interview with Ed Boon, not my one, said he wanted every Mortal Kombat character to be played by a celebrity. If this happened, what celebrity would you match with what fighter? Andy Serkis as mocap would be amazing.
That would actually be brilliant. I mean, it's such a strange one, isn't it? Because they, obviously, Ronda Rousey was in the prior game, and then we had, what's her name?
Megan Fox
in this one. And it's like, we are not getting great feedback, Ed, about how the quality of these voices. Lines,
because I should have asked him about that.
There was actually a YouTube creator who did a AI generated match exchanges,
right?
And they sounded better. It fed all of her lines into it, and it sounded better than she does. God. And it's like I feel sorry for them. Really do, because it isn't their wheelhouse. Much more so with Megan Fox, because of the fact that she actually is an actress and so should be able to deliver a good line here and there. But it is a bit alarming that these voiceover lines just feel like. They're just doing the hey,
well, the thing is,
press the clown, I'm Calculon, one take sort of thing. Like,
yeah, I saw that she doesn't actually, I thought she was doing the barks and the grunts and the everything. Yeah, she's not. No. There's a separate voice actor that does all
which,
the screams
again,
and
it's just like
everything else.
The only part that's emotive is done by someone else.
And it's like, the story stuff is so flat.
So I guess, like, so who are we picking an already existing Mortal Kombat character and getting them revoiced?
Yes. Because part of this was that he'd said, he wants everybody, like he had a dream that one day they would do a Mortal Kombat where they were all played by different actors, because he said that obviously Johnny Cage was inspired by Jean-Claude Van Damme anyway, because MK came from a Jean-Claude Van Damme game that didn't come out. And so people said that Keanu Reeves should be Kenshi, because there's a really good piece of artwork, like a bit of fan art from years ago. I think Boss Logic did it, of Keanu Reeves as Kenshi.
Now, the thing is that like Keanu Reeves always, even as Johnny Silverhand, has that sort of Californian surfer twang. Mm. Like, there's always a bit like, whoa, bro. Like, hey, man. Like, hey, I can see ghosts and stuff. Like, that, that isn't, whoa. Like, I don't think that that is a good fit for him personally.
He had that little run, you know, after The Matrix where he did that samurai movie. He sort of did, like, I'm the low samurai kind of dude for a while.
Yeah.
And then, like, now he's just John Wick, which is, like, John Wick's not a surfer, bro, but he is quite, like, down-tuned and, like, if there's comedy, it's deadpan.
But there's still those inflections that always come through that is just a bit like, is this a bit too lighthearted for where we're at? It's a tough one because I'm thinking, like, do you pick somebody who has brand recognition but maybe not the most recognizable voice, or do you go for somebody who has an incredibly recognizable voice? Like, I know that he's passed recently, but like Gilbert Gottfried has the most Iago the parrot. That would be hilarious to have.
Who'd you have him as be?
The Collector.
That's a great show. Nah, I was thinking
because it's got like an alien style thing. And he's got the weedy body that would work for that. But then
he'd
maybe
be great as the Collector though. Like I know the Collector in MK is more like
I'm sinister. Tearing your heart out.
Yeah, like, do you want to buy some of these wares? I think I was gonna go like down the meat-headed route. So I would get like the Rock would be Shao Kahn, or like I think Rock as Shao Kahn could be really fun because I think his big belly laugh that the Rock can do would be like a more charismatic kind of, because the version of him in MK1, like General Shao, is like quite like, I don't know, like he's like quite sassy and he wants more power and like whatever.
Yeah,
but I was
also
thinking you could do like Ken Watanabe could be really a really good Shang Tsung. Because he's menacing and like he's got the stature. The version of Shang Tsung that they've got now, though, and I always, every time I forget the dude's name, the guy that played Shang Tsung in the Mortal Kombat movie that they got back in MK11.
Oh, yeah, they actually got some of the original cast back in, didn't they?
But he was phenomenal. Like, obviously, they brought him back in. He's not in MK1, but the guy that they've, the new Shang Tsung in MK1 is kind of channeling that performance, and he's quite a conniving, like, he is like a snaky kind of guy.
Yeah.
I love that version of Shang Tsung. The way he holds himself, the way he walks and everything, he's got the mannerisms, like, perfect.
Yeah. I'm actually just thinking to myself, like, I would revise it from not Gilbert Gottfried, but I'd have Charlie Day play him, because I feel like the sort of like higher tone
play
voice with that would actually probably be a better version there. Just because
That'd be
I feel
cool.
like he'd be able to deliver some like really kind of mad lines there.
Right. I always wanted like, because remember when they were casting the movie that came out a couple of years ago, I really wanted Iko Uwais to be Liu Kang, like the dude that's in The Raid.
He's in
a bunch of martial arts movies, such a hard-hitting dude. And I know that they did get Joe Taslim to be Sub-Zero, which was my dream casting. I was like, that's perfect. But if you get Iko Uwais to be Liu Kang, then they can like fight each other or whatever. So like, I'd be going down the martial arts route, martial arts celebrity route, like get Tony Jaa back or something, rather than...
I typed in, right, so like just like actors with iconic voices, right? Mm. And it's given me some weird ones here, like Dolly Parton. So I was like, Christopher Walken should be in this somehow.
How, give me Shang Tsung.
Like, how can we get Christopher Walken into Mortal Kombat? Hey, I'm gonna break your spine.
Liu Kang, hello.
Hey, Liu Kang, stop. You're hurting me. You're hurting me.
If on a long enough timeline, if we all have to accept AI eventually, which I don't want to do, you would get all this. Ed Boon would get his dream, but they would all just be AI voice packs. But then you could have like Stan Lee could be in that. Stan Lee could be Sub-Zero or something.
Oh, I know who I'd want to bring in, but I can't for the life of me think of what character he'd play. Danny Dyer. Danny Dyer needs to be a Mortal Kombat.
He can be Kano. That's the only like English wide boy character.
You mug boy.
Yeah. I'll take your art.
Yeah,
that works pretty damn well. Let's do final question. As I've got we've got meetings, Jules. We've always got meetings around the corner around here. A question from Fifi Fu, who says, with games like Horizon Forbidden West, Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, God of War Ragnarok all being criticized for being too safe, do you think that we're expecting too much for second and third entries into series when it comes to Revolutions? What do we think that Spider-Man 2 can do to avoid being disappointing to some?
It's so weird, isn't it? Like, our level of expectations for video games is so out of whack at the moment because it's like everything needs to be the biggest and the best. And sequels, they do inherently sell themselves on that premise. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that these games are disappointing on their own merit, because it's not that they don't do anything wrong. They just don't do as much new as the rebooted or revamped version did before it. So it's interesting to try and keep your perspectives in check when it comes to these new titles coming out. I think that Spider-Man 2, in order to avoid disappointment, as it was put, it's if it was just the same game, right? Because when Miles Morales came out, it was like an expansion pack for that. It was effectively the same game with a few twists here, and I absolutely loved it.
I love what they did to the combat. Like the modifiers, holding L1, special moves were cool.
Exactly. So if they just carried that forward, I wouldn't be disappointed. They've not actually much to change or adapt to it. In fact, I was actually going to talk to you about the recent news that came out, which was that they're going to take full damage now, which is interesting.
But you can turn it off. And I was like, either commit to it or don't.
Yeah, but it was like an interesting thing to have like a sequel bring in something that is inherently a bad thing. You don't want to take damage from these full things, and you may end up with a few rogue deaths thanks to just a few mistimed like button presses. But I did find that interesting that it was like a sequel that added in more that gave the player less effectively.
I like, because my thing is, how tired is the gameplay loop? How tired is the audience? Have we got our fill of swinging around as Spider-Man? And for me, like, the physics of the swinging was really solid but not perfect. I always, my test of a Spider-Man game, and I started doing this back in the original Spider-Man 2, the movie tie-in, is like climb up to the top of the Empire State Building or one of the tallest points in the world, jump off, wait till the last minute to swing and see if the physics can keep up with you. And then on Spider-Man 2 on PS2, they would. You would swing right through and fly off the other end. You almost broke the game, but you would fly away. In Spidey 2018, that doesn't happen. They have a set velocity that Spider-Man can swing at maximum speed, and you fall faster than you swing through. So the physics kind of stop and then swing again. And so apparently that's been changed for the new one. Apparently they've just got a better physics model. So I'm hoping that it feels like I'm propelling a physical object through, you know, the streets I'm swinging properly.
I get you.
And if they've then put the full damage thing in there, then I guess there is there's like an incentive to land properly, to swing properly. I like that. But I want them to commit to that. Don't let me turn it off, because then artistically you're not committing to that. So like it's a weird thing. I think it's weird in world as well.
If you can turn it off, it means that no boss encounter or actual set piece will rely on you mastering
staying in the
that
air,
mechanic
yeah.
because you're basically just saying like, look, if we give you a free pass, then we ain't going to be including this as a skill check.
True. Yeah, it's one of those things where, like I said, it's like, how tired is the loop in the first place? Are we just getting the same thing? I mean, I'm one of the biggest complainers of like the safe sequel. I thought Forbidden West and Ragnarok were way too safe, mainly because in Ragnarok you don't get a new weapon for about 20 hours.
What do you improve? Like, how do you take a sequel like that and change everything when you've already changed everything the first time around? I do empathize with the video game developer being put into that situation, because it's like, well, do we just branch out with something completely different again and it acts as its own standalone title? It's a great idea, but man, is that risky.
That's true. I mean, I think like that's just the burden of the creator. I think that's kind of just on them to prove themselves kind of thing. But if it's complete personal thoughts on it, then for me, I would have brought in the Dropnir spear a lot faster, because once you get that thing, you start playing differently. It's a hybrid melee and ranged weapon. You're thinking about encounters differently.
Like maybe you start with Kratos being stripped of his original weapons and having to use that one first.
Maybe, because it just meant that you were like, because you started Ragnarok with everything that you end the original with, you're doing the same combos. You do get new moves, but like you're still, the guts of it feel really similar. And I get that their big pivot is Atreus, but for me, that's just another Sony first party bow guy. He plays the same as Ellie, Aloy, Jin Sakai.
I tell you what though, I'm very glad that they did that in the sequel, where they allowed you to keep all of your progress and items and stats, or like at least your basic move sets coming across, because I hate it when games do the power reset. It's like a real Nintendo thing. Just go like, oh yeah, like you've got to the sequel and you're right back at the start again. You've forgotten everything you learned the first time around. It's like when it especially stings when it's to do with Samus from the Metroid games.
Yes.
It's like,
how the suit malfunctioned again.
Yeah, it's just like, get better suits for a start, and also man, just try and remember a few of these moves.
Yes, especially in Metroid Dread, where it's the end of that timeline so far, and she's done everything. She's beaten like Mother Brain and everything, but then the suit just clicks a bit, and she's she's amnesia or whatever it is to get rid of everything.
I forgot how to roll up into a ball.
How do I double jump? Like, what am I doing?
I know, right?
It's a weird thing. But overall, massive thank you to everybody for sending in your various questions. We've got plenty more to get to. We'll try and do a rollover next week if Jules is free, but we'll see. If not, I'll find a guest star to slot in instead. For now, this has been the Untitled Panda Podcast. The EVP, the UBP,
the UBP.
I've been Scott Tilford. That's been Jules Gill.
I have indeed.
Massive thank you once again, and we'll catch you very soon. Goodbye.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.